But right now I want to introduce you to a man who's a biologist who is studying these little things that can have such great impact on your life. How the mechanisms in normal cells can be altered to turn into other things, like cancer. How does a normal cell take a bad route to a bad place? Well, this gentleman is the professor and chair of the Department of Health Sciences at Carleton University. I've been saying University of Ottawa and Carleton so many times that I almost forgot which university he's from. I've said those names so many times this morning. Martin Holchick, welcome to The Goods.
Thank you very much, Dalia. Good morning.
When I talked about this study right now, just as a professor, did you realize that there were so many students at your school who use these sugar baby, sugar daddy relationships?
I've heard about it. I've heard about it on the news in the last few days. Mm-hmm. And also I listened to you in the morning when I was driving here. I wasn't aware of the extent of that.
Can you understand how there's financial stress and all these different stresses that go into university that kids would try to find any way, because they can make up to $3,000 or more dollars a month doing this?
I can see perhaps from some perspective how there will be enormous pressure to be able to provide financial needs to put yourself or herself through university. As a parent of somebody who will start university next year, I'm actually horrified at the situation like that exists on campuses, where the people are, they feel that they're under pressure to do something like that.
I know there's a lot of pressure on campuses that kids have been through. I've had university students here, and they talk about just seeking mental health services, the wait list to be able to access them. So it just does seem like university. I don't know, you're a professor. So at one point, and I know we're deviating from topic here, but at one point you were a student.
Yes, I was.
For many years to become the biologist that you are right now. And now you're in the other side of things as a professor. Do you think that university has gotten more stressful than what people remember?
Well, that's a wonderful question. It's been a while since I was a student. And also, I think my student experience is a little bit different than the average, perhaps, Canadian student, because I am originally from what used to be Czechoslovakia. So I did all my schooling in then Czechoslovakia. It was very different. I came to Canada as a graduate student, so I experienced the Canadian system as a graduate student, and it's a little bit different because you are really working towards a very specific goal, and you don't mind putting in those 60, 70, 80 hours. And it's sort of almost expected that you live just for that specific project. But the expectations change now. We know that just having a bachelor's degree is often not sufficient. And so there is this pressure. It starts already in high school that you have to be the best because you're competing against everybody else. And so I think that creates an environment where students are tremendously stressed. They worry about the little things where perhaps with a little bit of hindsight you can take a step back and look at things very differently. But when you're immersed in that situation, you cannot do that.
And then the finances and everything on
finances,
top of it.
Finances, the cost of tuition is increasing. The cost of living is increasing. And often the students feel under tremendous pressure to reconcile all those things, and they don't have much time to do that, right? So yeah, I can totally see it from that perspective, that it is very difficult, and we need to be very sympathetic to that and find means and ways to allow them to excel in what they're very good at and allow them to achieve their goals as they move forward.
Yes, Darren, who is calling these people whores. We need to be sympathetic, Darren, on Facebook. I'm Dahlia. This is The Goods. We have Martin Holchick with us right now. He's a professor and chair, Department of Health Sciences at Carleton University. And he's here also to talk about, he didn't know he was here to talk about sugar baby relationships, neither did I, until I asked him the question. But the research of the path that your cells take that can lead to cancer or other diseases, this is very important research that can explain a lot of these things that elude us when it comes to how cells, like how does a normal cell, a cell is happy, a cell is healthy, a cell is doing great. What all of a sudden makes this big change that it can turn to cancer?
Right. So let me take maybe one step back and just sort of talk very briefly for those listeners who may not be familiar with it. So we have every cell in the human body is composed of proteins. So these are the building blocks which build the cell and allow the cell to do its proper function. But the proteins are encoded in the DNA. So DNA would be that information which every cell has, which provides all the instructions to the cell how to make these proteins. And in between, there is this other molecule called RNA, which carries the information from the DNA to a machinery which makes these proteins. And so the cell, at every single time, a decision has to be made what proteins to make and how many of these proteins to make and how quickly to make these proteins. And it differs between different cells. So, for example, if you think of a skin cell, which will have a different proteins than, for example, liver cell, because the function of these cells is different. And anywhere along that way, you can have problems occurring. And so we often typically would think about mutations in the DNA, where these mutations will then change the type of the protein which is being made. Often they will lead to what's called a loss of function. So these proteins no longer fulfill their function. They're non-functional, and it will give diseases where, for example, you can think of Marfan syndrome, where people have a different structural features. You can think of Michael Phelps. You know, so he's an extraordinary swimmer because of some of the changes his body allowed him to the changes in the structure of his body, which allow him to be a wonderful swimmer. So those are genetic changes. But also the processes, how these proteins are made, can be also affected. And so that's what we are interested in, that how do these cells decide what proteins to make and when to make them? So the link to cancer you alluded to comes from the fact that the cancer cells are often under tremendous stress. And this is sort of a cellular stress where they're exposed to different conditions which normally the normal cells would not be happy to be living in. And so, for example, when we are treating cells with chemotherapy, that provides an opportunity for normal cells, for cancer cells to be killed. And so they need to be able to somehow mount a response to that. So they become chemo-resistant. So we are trying to understand these molecular steps the cancer cells will take, which will allow them to make proteins, which will prevent them from dying. Sounds sort of complicated, but...
Well, when you talk about cellular stress, for me, I think of anxiety and I think of emotions, but there's different types of cellular stress. What are different types of cellular stress that cells
For example, a lack of oxygen, chemotherapy drugs, there will be toxins in the body, could be irradiation, could be deprivation of these nutrients. So we constantly bathe our cells through our bloodstreams with nutrients and factors which will allow them to maintain their function. And
if you're in a polluted atmosphere, are you creating more cellular stress?
Absolutely, absolutely. So often we look at this sort of macroscopic level as a human body, but at some point it has to always translate down to the a cellular level. And so the easy way to think about it would be, for example, where the any toxins getting into the body will then mount a cellular stress response, and which will create additional chemicals in the body, which then the cells have to deal with. And often they generate things called reactive oxygen species, which can then damage the DNA, they can damage the cellular membranes, they can damage proteins, that leads to cellular damage, which can then lead to additional problems, atrophy of the tissue function or problems in the organ function. You can think of kidneys failure, liver damage, and things like that.
What about emotional stresses? Because just being emotionally stressed, you can start doing physical things too that can impact, I guess, that cellular stress. So how does emotional stress affect cellular stress?
Fantastic question. Unfortunately, I don't have an answer for it. It's very much outside of the realm of my expertise. But a few months ago, I think, you had a colleague of mine from the Department of Neuroscience, Kim Hellmans, on
yes.
the show. And so she was talking about some of these aspects where our well-being very much impacts our physical well-being as well. And so what's that connection between those two? What are the biochemical and molecular biology links between the emotional stress and the physical stress and the cellular stress? So there are questions we are trying to understand. From my research group perspective, we're very much at the cellular level. And so often those links to the upper level elude us.
Do you ever scrape off some of your own cells and study them under a microscope to see what your cell's going through?
I might have done something like that in the past.
That you're in an interesting position where you could see how your body is actually reacting to the different stressors.
Absolutely, you can very much do that. But also it allows us then to take patient cells and look at how specific patient cells can function in a particular environment. Perhaps I can share a story with you where before I joined Carleton, I was at Children's Hospital here at CHEO for many years, almost two decades. And Although I'm trained as a basic scientist, I was never involved in any patient-directed research. I had an opportunity about 4 or 5 years ago to be involved in a case of a rare genetic disease, and I had an opportunity to meet with a family and a patient who suffered from this rare mitochondrial disease. And it showed me sort of the power of how you can engage patients or patients' caregivers in a very basic research. And we were actually working with cells from this girl, her name was Kate, and we were able to look at how her cells are different from the normal cells, trying to understand where we can then understand the mechanism of her disease. And would it be then possible to find means where we can take that knowledge we have and try to find a way of either cure the disease, which often is not possible, especially in genetic disease, but to mitigate the impact of the disease. And in this particular case, unfortunately, Kate passed away. But the legacy she allowed us to establish, and her family involvement in our research, it still continues. So we still have these cells. We still work with these cells in the lab. And we're trying to build the abundance of knowledge specifically from her. And then later on, we were able to expand that collection of people with similar disease to about 18, and hopefully trying to help people in the future.
Martin Holchuk is with us right now on The Goods. I'm Dahlia. He's a professor and chair department of health sciences at Carleton University, looking at cells on the cellular level, the mechanisms in normal cells that can be altered and lead to other things like maybe cancer. So what right now, what is your key hope in the studies that you're doing? What do you want to discover, expose, or understand the most at this point in time?
We have two mosts. One most is connected to Kate and the disease she suffered from. The acronym is SIFD, and it basically just describes the disease. And we are hoping to be able to link that specific mutation she had to understanding why the disease developed, because it's a very subtle change. If you imagine a book of several thousands of pages, one word has been changed, and yet it has such a tremendous negative impact. So we're trying to understand, really it's very simply, can we just understand why this particular mutation leads to disease? The other one is in the realm of pediatric cancer. So we're trying to understand specifically in rhabdomyosarcoma. These are soft tissue tumors, which are often found in children, again, how we can learn about the specific mechanisms in these tumors and to link it to the resistance to treatment. Can we find a better treatment for these children?
Yes, please.
Yes.
That's all I had to say to that. Martin Holchuk, he's the professor and chair department of health sciences at Carleton University. Thanks for talking about cellular research and for weighing in on sugar babies. It was actually a very good perspective to have from somebody who started in university on one side of the university fence there and who ended up on another. And you can see where people are coming from on both sides.
Absolutely.